Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to the Autocar Podcast, My Week in Cars, with Pryor here, Cropley there. Hello, Steve.
How are you going, mate?
Very well, mate, because we have just been over to see my mate, now your mate, Simon Scott Russell, who looks after a lot of Lotus Elises.
Yeah.
Cool place. Interesting.
It was, yeah. I tell you what, the thing it taught me, I've had two early Elises, and what I now realise is that you need a specialist to really tell you the ins and outs of these early cars, because I thought they were completely blameless, made of aluminium, nothing to go wrong. But and they are still pretty bulletproof, but there were some rather important bits that he told us about, weren't there?
Yeah, a few sort of mild steel grommets and bits like that that have that galvanic corrosion that sets in. But yeah, what I learnt / took away, because there are lots of people who look after lots of different classics, but there is something about, I think, somebody who looks after only one specific mark or model or really because they effectively gather data by seeing time and time again the same things.
Yeah.
That actually, if you were a broad classic car specialist and you saw everything, you actually might only see one or two examples of an MGB every 3 years and not know the things that go wrong with MGBs.
I think it's the case. And it's also fun, isn't it? You know, we're plugging into their knowledge. I used to love talking to 2CV lovers because they knew every single bolt, you know, the depth of that knowledge is, it's really mesmerizing, actually, I think.
And it's funny, probably more as a classic owner than a new car owner, you do. When you buy something, you just start on the process, don't you, of the learning about the start the process again. Yeah, and I can see why people have a classic and then go, I'm just going to get another one.
Yeah.
Because I already know what goes wrong. I know what it's like, you know, and there's something about that.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've got a letter, Steve. You can write to us, autocar@haymarket.com. Kevin Webb has written to say, each time I visit a fuel station, I glance at the prices displayed on the roadside sign. I think Kevin's got a point here, by the way. He says, what I see is fuel priced to the 1/10th of a penny. This is nonsense. If your local supermarket priced products this way, you'd think they'd taken leave of their senses. How about Autocar petitioning fuel companies to lean on their retailers and get this nonsense abolished? I mean, there is something to be said for that. Because if it's a 1/10th of a penny difference and you put 50 litres in, that's 5 pence over a fuel tank. I mean, it just, the idea that you would claim some kind of competitive advantage over the 1/10th of a penny does a bit, I don't know. Yeah, maybe there should be a bit more, I don't know, clarity about it. Yeah, it seems a bit. I don't like adverts where they say this new TV is only 329. What does that mean? Say it's £329, but the ASA doesn't, advertising standards, it doesn't care. Let them do it. But yeah, I think Kevin might be onto something there.
Yeah,
we have a bit more appreciation of how much fuel actually costs if it just said per litre £1.35 or £1.37.
Well, that's whatever. It's the way the rest of us think, isn't it, as he says. Yeah. So he's right.
Yeah. I think we're right. Yeah, thanks for the note, Kevin. Over the next half hour or thereabouts, Steve and I are going to be talking about our respective columns in Autocar, plus more besides. This week, there is some sensible news on Euro 7 regulations.
Yeah, well, I suspect there are people in the world that know much more about this than me, but it's sort of come to my attention anyway that the Euro 7 toxic emissions standards are the same as Euro 6, which means that car manufacturers don't have to go to the trouble of re-engineering their cars' induction systems and exhaust systems for a declining group of cars, and they can spend what money they have, and they need plenty, on electrification.
Yeah.
After all, the Euro 6 standards, as we've often said in the MAG, are extremely tough anyway, and there's very little to be gained. And as a result, the car manufacturers, who are, I think, slightly surprised at this outbreak of good sense that occurred, they predict that that, you know, between now and 2035, I think it is, 80% of punters will feel confident to change their cars, even people who aren't going for EVs, but are just want a new car and will probably buy an ICE car.
Mm.
And that saves, you know, that means you're getting rid of Euro 4s and 3s and 5s and things like that. So it's a net benefit.
Because Euro 7 was pretty, the proposals for some of the Euro 7 regulations were so stringent that a car might take 20, 30 seconds to actually start and stuff like
yeah.
that. Is that right, wasn't it? It was incredibly hard to make.
And it was going to push press.
Add hundreds, if not more, to the prices of cars.
Yeah, yeah, I think thousands, yeah. Mm. So it's all worked out well.
Mm. And as you say, the modern internally combusted car, even partly electrified or not, is pretty clean in terms yeah. of toxic emissions.
Yeah.
And
yeah, the trick is to get rid of the really dirty ones, I think, yeah. that go back 10, 15 years.
Yeah, yeah. So the quicker you make that transition, the better. What about brakes and tyres?
They're introducing standards yeah,
right.
for particulates, okay. which I think is all right, particularly because some of the cars we're now encouraging people to drive up are weigh twice as much as a 1997 Ford Mondeo, Ford Focus. And that must create more particulates. It just must.
Yeah. In tyres particularly, mustn't it?
Yeah.
It's not necessarily. Mind you, so I was thinking about this. You know, like a high-performance tyre, like, you know, we get when we test, I don't know, we go to a racetrack and they go, yeah, we've put this car on the latest Michelin Pilot Sport Cup 2 R's or whatever.
Yep.
You'll get three good laps out of them.
Yep.
The breakdown of those must be much higher than the breakdown in an economy tyre, which you might find particularly in an EV where rolling resistance is so crucial.
Mm.
Do those tyres last longer and create less particulates?
I believe the so-called eco tyres do.
They are better.
Wear less and create less gubbins for those very reasons. Because the tyre manufacturers have been aware for a while that these standards are going to tighten, and they're trying to do their bit. It's another case of the motor industry moving to fix its problems without getting a lot of credit for it.
Yes. Yeah. Tyres are, so little understood broadly, I would say.
Yeah.
I think most of the performance benefits over the last 20 years in performance cars, so much of it has come from the tyres.
It has, yeah.
And yet we know so little about it, really. It's hard to do a tyre test properly
in
a magazine, because you find out what tyre works for a specific model on a specific set of circumstances.
Temperature.
Yeah, exactly. To say, oh, you should absolutely buy these Michelins over these Pirellis or over these whatevers. I mean, okay, it works on that Volkswagen Golf that you've tested that day. But is that
true? What about
everything in every circumstance? And what about when they've got 5,000 miles of wear on? And what about when, you know, somebody doesn't quite get the pressures to the exact manufacturer's
specification? Yeah, yeah. Oh,
there's so much in it. Yeah. But I'm intrigued because, the harder you make a tyre, the less it wears, but then the worse the performance and therefore braking performance is what we'd care about most, I suppose, for safety.
Yeah.
That must...
I think EV braking is presumably helpful in reducing particulates a bit because of the...
Yeah, because you don't
The regenerative thing.
Yeah, because you use the pads so infrequently.
But I must say, as you and I know, for the sort of circuit driving that we've done... The difference between, on an absolute control car, the difference between, an okay tyre and a fantastic tyre can be seconds a lap, can't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Even when you're talking treaded road tyres.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's about choosing the right rubber for that purpose.
Yeah. Anyway, tell me about pre-flight checks and Audi SQ8.
Well, I
This is a regulatory created issue as well.
I mean, I've done a bit of whinging about the controls and the funny haptic controls in the SQ8 that I'm driving, the e-tron that I'm driving. And I just find that you're best to say to yourself, I am going to spend the next 30 seconds configuring the car as I want it to be configured before I attempt to drive it. And because of, you know, I've been driving all my life, you just get used to leaping in a car and you somehow your hands move and turn off the handbrake and select a gear and you're down the road within a couple of seconds.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's like that anymore because you've got to turn off the lane departure warning. You know, I've never met one I like. Mm. There's a gizmo in the Audi which looks at all speed limit signs and bongs if you go 1 mile an hour over the speed limit sign. Yeah. And it's so you sort of need to do a little tour around the car to turn everything off. And it reminds me of learning to fly. I can remember when before I ever had a pilot's license, I wanted to do it. I used to watch these little airplanes on the aprons of airports, and they'd be sitting there for minutes with the engine running. And I always wondered why.
Yeah.
But then, you know, when I had a go at it, I discovered that, you know, checklists and safety procedures and looking around and testing things. And I think we just need to get ourselves into a bit of a mindset where we put a couple of minutes into configuring the car the way we want it before we get going.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. I think it is an increasingly common thing, isn't it? As car makers have to meet these GSR2 latest bout of safety regulations, where, as you say, the car bongs if you go a mile an hour over the speed limit that it thinks exists, not necessarily the actual speed limit on the road. So there's stretches where I've done a bit of driving up in Scotland recently, and there is a long stretch of one road where it says they've recently reconfigured the truck speed limit to 50 from 40 for lorries. But now it says trucks over 7.5 tons are allowed to do 50 miles an hour. Of course, cars are allowed to do 60 miles an hour. But every time you drive past one of those signs, the car thinks this 50 mile an hour speed limit applies.
Yeah.
So if you have it configured in the standard way that the car arrives, according to somebody's bright idea that this is the way the car will know what the speed limit is, it would be bonging at you all the time.
Yeah.
We might touch on my column later. In the last few years, right, cars have got better and better, but I have never wanted to burn so many cars as in the last couple of months.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily their fault, you know. I got in a Range Rover. Was it a Range Rover the other day? No, New Defender the other day. That had quite a good... You push one button on the steering wheel and it brought up on the touchscreen the option to push your personalised... adaptive driver assistance settings.
Right.
So it's one button on the steering wheel, and then you go, well, those are the settings I want, and therefore it would turn off most of those things.
All the stuff you just
and including, want. Yeah, including, even if you're not, because I stand there, it has to bong when the speed limit changes. So even if you're not breaking the speed limit,
yeah,
it'd bong at you just because the speed limit has changed.
Yes.
Which I consider the most needless thing I've considered. And I don't need it.
No.
Nobody I've spoken to wants it. Nobody I've spoken to in the business, out of the business. Nobody likes this idea.
You do get the feeling that a bunch of people have been sitting around in a room and thought, here's another thing we can do. You know, the electronics
what
are in the car.
What can we do next? What can we do next to...
Yeah. The one I hate the most...
justifying our existence.
You know how you're driving along in a car and there's a difference between the speed on the dashboard and the speed in the sat nav, because one's, you know, looks at the sky and tells you the actual speed.
Mm.
And there are plenty of times when I've been caught bonging between the 32 showing on the dashboard of the car and the 30 that's actual.
Oh, interesting.
And that, you know, you're not even doing the wrong thing, but you're still getting pulverized for it.
Yeah.
Got to stop.
It was a good thing I drove the other day that had... on the average speed camera sections, it knew when they came in and it knew when they stopped, and it would tell you on the screen what your average speed was as you spoke.
Wow.
As a live update, this is your average speed so far through this average speed camera section, which is cool and actually quite useful. But if there's a little bit of traffic, then actually, because the differences in an average are influenced so much by the extremes. If you spend any time stationary at all, your average speed through that section would drop massively.
Collapses, yeah.
So then you could go really quick.
Yeah.
And still not boost the average speed camera. But the idea is that you don't go over, say, 50. The idea is not that you do a naught there and 100 there. Yeah. The idea is you kind of, you know, it would be dangerous to do more than 50 anyway.
Yeah.
But an interesting use of those.
It is. It is.
I thought, at least of the tech.
Anyway. Definitely.
Yeah. Before we go for a break, tell me about Jeepsters. What do they call them? People who drive Jeep enthusiasts.
Oh well, this comes from Mr. Atwood, our acting editor, who spends a lot of time in America because he's got he's got relatives there. I think his brother lives in Texas.
Right.
He's addicted to running marathons, so he runs marathons all around the world. Amazing thing for a bloke to do, especially as a journalist. Lazy as a journalist.
Yeah, lazy as us. And he'll run around. He does like sub three hours or about three hours, doesn't he? He's fast.
Prodigiously quick, yeah. Anyway, I think he was running the Houston Marathon or something or other. It might have been half marathon. And he lobbed in the airport, hired a car, was looking for a Toyota Corolla and was given a Jeep Wrangler five-door.
Yeah.
Which he duly drove for a couple of days. And when he came back, he parked at somewhere in Houston. And when he came back, there was this blue rubber duck that was tucked into the driver's door handle. And it turns out that apparently Jeep owners in America, if they approve of another Jeep nearby, they leave a rubber duck on it. And he thought it was bizarre, and I thought it was equally, certainly bizarre enough to bung in the column anyway. Yeah. And nobody's quite explained what the significance of a rubber duck is, but apparently it's general. You can see Jeeps with, you know, a dozen rubber ducks all...
Oh, really?
All positioned along the top of the dashboard.
Yeah.
So we wait for it to spread across the Atlantic, as everything does.
Interesting, as things do. I wonder, do you carry a few with you? Or do you wait for pay yours forward?
Or donate one of yours to the bloke that you...
It's interesting. What do you collect?
Yeah. I was wondering what, you know, if we wanted to found this, what would we do for Land Rover? What would be the thing? Bulldog? No.
I wonder... some little Labrador or something or a spaniel would be the old series Land Rover of choice. Yeah,
It's coming. I'll tell you.
Maybe it is. Yeah. Well, I'm not against it.
Yeah.
Nah. Anything that makes people like cars, I'm okay with.
Yeah.
I think
maybe it could be models of a ginger cat, such as your own cat.
He's just gone upstairs, mate. He's had enough of the podcast, and he's had a nice week this week because you've come today, and our videographer came and stayed the other day. So he's had plenty of company. He's enjoyed it.
Yeah, he's very sociable though. He's been sort of strolling about. He failed to walk on my keyboard for once.
Well, that has to make a change, a refreshing change. Steve and I are going to take a short break, and we'll be back for more My Week in Cars in just a sec.
What car would you buy if you could buy any car? What car would you buy if you knew you could save thousands? What car would you buy if you could compare the latest offers from approved dealers? What car would you buy if you could do all of this in one place in just a few simple clicks? And where would you go to buy that car? What car? Car buying made easy. Visit whatcar.com to buy your next new car.
Welcome back to My Week in Cars. You can write to us, autocar@haymarket.com, as Michael, no surname, sorry, has done. We talked about a Citroen EC4 last week, didn't we, and a battery issue that a bloke was having. Michael said he had an EC4 for 2 years, did 44,000 miles in a 100-mile-a-day commute. The range was a disappointment, especially below 10 degrees. And I think, though, I had better range than your other correspondent, although the same service interval issues, which is 12,000 miles, but nobody seems to know. Anyway, Michael says, prove the financial case for the cheapest new Tesla Model 3, which is 100 miles more for only 26% more battery. The thing that strikes me is that the LFP battery can be charged to 100%, and the ease of not having to worry about charging above 90% cannot be underestimated.
No.
Because some manufacturers do say, I mean, I ran a Polestar for a while, and the blurb does say if you can get away with charging for not more than 90, that's preferable. But I mean, depends if you can afford to lose that bit of range off it, doesn't it, really?
So. I guess then you just, it's the planning that's the problem, isn't it? Because, you know, yesterday, I was telling you, my missus broke down on the M4, right? And it was necessary to drive quite a long time, distance to rescue her. This was unplanned mileage. The car that I had was electric, and I took it to the very outside of the envelope too. So it's all very well to say, well, I'm only going to charge 80 or 90%, but if you suddenly find you need the 10, you can't just stick it in like you would with a petrol.
Mm.
So it's a bit of a drag. That was that was a bit of an adventure. The Mini can picked up a kind of bolt in the back passenger side tire. She was there for a couple of hours standing on the
by the side of the motorway.
She was saying two things. Mm. You forget how quick and how intimidating the traffic is on a motorway. It just seems normal when you're in it, but when you stand there watching it go by, it's all this pent-up energy is amazing.
Mm.
And also it's it's just the danger. The danger of the rescue people are in is considerable because winching this car onto a flatbed put the bloke at risk, she feels. Mm.
Yeah.
So
quite it a is thing. The it's yes, it's the it's a pretty hairy situation, and the Mini has no spare, but it's not a position you'd want to fit a spare.
No,
in any way. You'd
that's what
be,
she said.
You'd
even
want to
if
be
I
off
had
the motorway, to do that.
Yeah, I think. We've been rescued three times lately because we had some adventures with the Alpine, you remember?
Of course, yeah.
Each time, each of the three people has turned out to be a really lovely guy, you know, helpful, relaxed, go the second mile, really nice people. It takes a while to get them to
come
because they're busy, you know, but I tell you what, I don't know if anybody who rescues people off motorways is listening to this, but you know, a sample of three, you're all a bunch of good people.
Yeah, all power to your elbow. Absolutely. We had a Seat Ibiza here. My daughter used to run a 1 litre Seat Ibiza. Well, maybe it was a 1.2, but it was that little petrol trickle.
Mm-hmm.
And that had a problem, had a misfire or something, wasn't, you know, certainly wasn't firing on everything. And a bloke from the AA turned up and said, these injectors do go, but I've got some in the van.
Really?
And he pulled off the caps and he said, well, two of these I can see have been replaced already. One of them hasn't. I'll try replacing that and see if that works. Popped a new one in. Job done.
Wow.
And just the daily regular exposure, plus the fact that they are, you know, pretty self-starting.
Yeah.
You know, they are people who are prepared to be out there doing it as well. It gives them a degree of initiative, I think. That's.
I think so. Yeah. Our experience has been great. I don't exactly look forward to the next breakdown, but I suspect it'll go okay.
Yeah. Yeah. More events coming, Steve. Castle Coombe in June. What's that going to be?
Yeah, there's a thing called Masters of Motoring, which I think is in a weekend, in the first weekend, I think, in June.
Mm.
First day is a lot of demonstrations of rather flash cars at fast cars at Castle Coombe. Second one is a sort of exhibition concourse classic motoring festival at a nearby stately home called, forgotten the name of it.
You carry on and I'll look it up in your column if it's on.
It's going to come to me. No, it's not come to me.
No, it's not come to you.
Used to go there a lot.
I like near Castle Coombe. Is the next village along from Castle Coombe called Tiddlywink?
Don't know. Yeah, I only know Castle Coombe Village.
No, I think there's a, I'm going to look this up as well while you continue the story.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure the village is called Bowood House.
Bowood House is the one, yeah. It's actually a nice place to go. Even we used to go, the Sprogs were small.
Hmm.
And there's an extraordinary, used to be an extraordinary treehouse that everybody, you know, to keep your kids occupied for hours. It's great.
Yes, there is.
The point I was trying to make is that here's another one. It sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
It's local to us.
Yeah.
I should go because I believe in supporting local stuff. But it's another one. You know, there's how do we fit them all in? Because here you are down the road from Bicester Heritage. There must be at least six things you could go to in a year.
Many more, I think, because there are four scrambles at least, but then scramblers have their own little just sort of separate meetings to that. And then quite often people like Rollhard or Radwood and the other stuff, they will go. It's just, and then club meets will
Festival of the Unexceptional is just up the road. Goodwood's,
you know, Two Goodwoods plus the Goodwood Breakfast Meets plus I'm going to mention another publication, Pistonhead Sunday Services.
Yeah,
you could be, and then just places to go. Caffeine and Machine, Retrosect are going to have a thing, aren't they? That you could just be, and this I'm talking largely southeast here because that's kind of where I kind of where I live. But actually, multiply that through all of the regions as well. I mean, it's just.
You've got to sit down and mark your card at the beginning of the year almost, don't you? And also you need the organisers to tell you in very good time when they're having an event, because otherwise you won't get there.
Yeah,
I mean it's a wonderful situation.
Oh, it's great, isn't it?
Damn lucky, but I if I don't support Masters of Motoring, I'll feel that I haven't done the right thing by the people in my locality,
because it is down the road.
Yeah.
I don't know where the name Tiddlywink comes from, but it is. Yes, it is. It is just down the road from
Castlecombe.
Yeah, I drive through it from Chippenham on the way out. And is it the nicest place name in England?
Tiddlywink. It is.
It's cool, isn't it?
Somebody I knew reckoned there was a place not far from Manchester called Cowpat Hovel. But I think that's fairly crap.
Yeah. The name is said to derive from rhyming slang for a quick drink, one of its cottages historically being known to serve beer to passing cattle drovers.
Well.
Is that right?
Well, I'm sure it's right.
Yeah, we'll go with it. Anyway, that's according to Wikipedia. What's next on the list? Two things to talk about. Let's talk my column briefly, very briefly.
Yeah.
I think I was in the office yesterday, day before yesterday. Picked up a copy of Classic and Sports Car magazine, which is our sibling title, written by excellent people. And
including yourself, mate.
Including me now and again. Yeah, I've got to write a Porsche 356 story for them, actually, in the not too distant. CVR Griffith versus Marcos Mantara versus MGR V8. I thought, oh, that's interesting. And I started flicking through and I thought, blimey, I remember. Sorry, sound like an old I remember. I say horrible phrase to use in a podcast. I do remember when those three plus a Morgan Plus 8 and a Ginetta G33 were a group test that I remember, and I was a grown up at that point. A group test of those brand new cars.
Was it an auto car?
No, it wasn't. It was a defunct title. But a bloke that we both know called John Barker, I think, wrote it in. Performance car in 93. And you know, I'm delighted to say that the bloke I grew up reading, he's not that much older than me, actually, but, you know, he is now a mate of mine. How nice is that?
Yeah.
How cool is that?
Handy driver.
Yeah, really. Yeah, and just lovely guy. Anyway, I think he wrote that feature, or Pete Tomlin wrote it. I can't. But it was a while ago.
Yeah,
but anyway, the short of it is, I thought, oh, my goodness, here we are reading classic car stuff about stuff that feels like it was about 3 weeks ago.
I know.
But I mentioned it to a few people and somebody said, oh, I love that, you know, miss the days when you could have those eccentric machinery. And I thought, actually, you can still buy a Morgan Plus 6.
Yes.
Whatever. Ginetta just, not so many road cars as it, or its focus isn't road cars, but it probably makes more cars than ever. It's certainly more financially stable than ever.
Yeah.
The Lotus Elise has come and gone since those were around. You can now buy an aerial, which you couldn't. Caterhams are still as exciting as they ever were. Morgan now do a three-wheeler as well as the other stuff.
They do.
I think there's more, you know, we're as well served as we ever were.
Yeah. Stuff like the Nomad, you know, what a car that is.
Yeah.
Nothing like it in the back in the day, is
it? No. And I think in terms of sort of self-build cars as well, we are... The professionalism of that side of the business is higher than it would have been 30 years ago.
Oh, much higher.
Much higher. Much better.
The thing I was, when I read that column, I was thinking about the unevenness with which cars, you know, from 20, 30 years ago go forward. You know, some keep their reputation, you know, very high reputation, seem relevant. Morgan Plus 8 seems relevant to me, even though it's a quirky car. And some of them have just gone, and it's so it'd be interesting if you were choosing in the moment to know what the hell's going to happen in the 25 years' time.
Oh, interesting. go on. If you could pick a limited run British-built sports car today that would have a good reputation in 25 years' time.
Aerial Atom 4.
Yeah.
Totally. I think it's so spectacular anyway, but also beautifully made and none around. Market entirely controlled by Aerial, so the car you buy, second-hand car you buy, is admittedly pretty high-priced, but it's also perfect.
Yeah.
And so I reckon they're going to leave let's hope they're still doing it anyway in 25 years.
Sure. Yes, I dare say they will be. Yeah.
Yeah.
I went down to Aerial not so long ago for a chat, and they were talking about some of the used car market. And as you say, most of them come back and get sold through Aerial without ever being advertised. There was one up for sale for quite a lot of money. And they said, well, the thing is, the owner wants quite a lot of money for it. But actually, most people will look at that and think, I could buy a new one for not much more.
Yeah.
So that will be a bit difficult to have around. But most of them come back and they go out the door at a reasonable, you know, a price so close to the, you know, to a new one. People will just go, I just want one. They've got a list of people who want them. And that's the...
It's amazing, you know, isn't it? Remember, I had one for 3.5 years.
Mm.
And I got back to the pound note exactly what I paid for it after 3.5 years.
That's remarkable, isn't it?
I mean, admittedly, that the prices of Aerial 3.5s had gone up, but it's not bad. Boy, it made you feel awfully good. And the car was perfect, incidentally.
Mm.
Nothing wrong with it.
Mm. I reckon.
I was just not equal to the damn car. That was a problem. Too quick.
They are fast, aren't they?
Well, not...
You had a supercharged one?
Well, yeah, I did two stupid things. three stupid things. I went back for the brake kit.
Right.
Not really necessary because it stopped perfectly well anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I went back for the supercharger, which was really stupid because even the normally aspirated car was quick. And I went back for a windscreen, which I don't regret because that did allow us to do a bit of touring around in it. Didn't look as cool, but actually, funnily enough, they've refined the screen into something much smaller but aerodynamically very efficient, as we're about to explain in the rag in the next couple of weeks.
Interesting. What, a full screen or a little aero?
The little aero screen that's a sort of air dam, but it makes a huge difference to how you feel in the cockpit. And it also, as we found in a wind tunnel research that we're going to explain, converts lift to downforce.
Excellent.
Very interesting.
That is interesting. Yes, that will be... When have you got? You've got to write that this afternoon.
Monday.
Monday.
So I think it'll be in the week after next.
Okay.
Issue of the week, whatever that is, mid-Feb.
Yeah, that's cool. I think at end of Feb, I've got that Porsche 356.
I'm looking forward to hearing about that because they're so revered, aren't they? But it is a VW Beetle with a big fat body.
With an aerodynamic shape. I mean, it must have looked in 1948. It must have looked from another planet. You know?
Yeah.
It must have looked spectacular.
And they were bulletproof, weren't they? Do you remember? I remember them being used in round Australia trials, you know, really 15,000-mile beating around on the worst roads in the world. And because they were strong, they you know, came through it.
Mm. I'm not a massive replica sort of bloke, but I could have a Beetle with a 356 body on it and feel 356-shaped coupe body and feel pretty good about
it. Yeah.
Feel pretty all right about it, I think.
A lovely shape.
I could be really happy with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing story.
I mean, I'd get looked down upon by real 356 owners, but who cares? right. Lastly, you've tried another decent Ford this week.
Oh, yes.
Well, would you go as far as saying it's a decent Ford?
I would. Yeah. I've been whinging about the Ford Mach-E, the first EV, the American built so called Mustang Mach-E, for whatever it is, a couple of years. Certainly, I think it showed up on our market in 91. And it always seemed to me to be inadequately developed in the suspension. I know this is a bit of a litany because I was going on about this just the other day with another of their cars. But they've taken it seriously this time. Second attempt, put up a much improved suspension under it, and now it goes well. As I proved the other day, you can sit in the car, go quite a long distance, and feel okay about it. It's still not got the level of sophistication that I think comes with a BMW i4, which is a similarly priced and similarly sized machine, but it's a hell of a lot better, and it's got what I always think of as Ford appeal. I just, you know the story. My grandfather was a Ford dealer in the middle of Australia. I've just got it in the blood, no matter how I try and not have it.
Yeah.
And so I'm pleased. I think it's a car you could recommend to people now.
That's a good thing, isn't it? Because every time I have seen one of late, I've gone, oh, I like them, but couldn't recommend it.
It's never a car pitching, terrible pitching, but they seem to have, just by increasing spring rates, I think, they seem to have tamed it.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Because, yes, it's
still high price, mind you.
Yeah, but it's quite an attractive looking car, I think, isn't it? You know, and it's just, there's a lot about it that I have liked, but when somebody says, should I buy one? I've always gone, probably not. You should try one and see if you get on with the car. And this would be a nice way to just go, when somebody says, I'm thinking about, suddenly you can go, okay, now, yes, you can put that on your shortlist confidently.
Yeah, have a go, because you might not get the one with the better suspension.
But it's not hardware in terms of pickup points and...
No. I think it's just rates.
It's literally rates of springs and dampers and shizzle.
But pretty thorough job, so they say.
Good. Well, that is good news.
It is good.
That is good news. What's next for you, Steve? I think I'm around most of next week.
I need to sit down and write this aero story, this aerial aero story, and then... stuff.
Yeah. Good trip, that, wasn't it? So it was just, was it last thing before Christmas we did this? It was a trip to Catesby Tunnel, which is a railway tunnel, dead straight.
Yeah.
Not far from here, actually. It's in Northamptonshire, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm trying to think how long it is. A couple of miles through a hillside, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm going to get this. I was going to say I might get this wrong if I'm not careful. I think it's on the old London to Manchester railway.
I think you're right.
Which effectively HS2 is now sort of replacing.
Yeah.
But, a lot of bats.
Yeah, that's it.
It's a bat cavern, which is, so there's a bit of the tunnel they can't use the other end because the bats like
that's
it.
That's right. There's a colony, isn't there, that they've had to specially set up.
It's pretty special
set up.
Colony as bats go, isn't it, I think? Yeah. I mean, most bat colonies are special, but this one's particularly.
Well, they're pretty. It's a pretty ritzy turnout for the bats, isn't it? You know, it's a luxury.
But yeah, cool place. A turntable at each end, which is just cool. And amazing. Just so atmospheric to be in that tunnel.
Yeah.
Just really cool. But the idea is same temperature all the time. Same aero, the floor move, you know, because the car is rolling, you get totally authentic feel.
Yeah.
And wind tunnels can't give you that.
No anchoring, no funny cavitation of a great big fan or anything.
Yeah.
No, the thing that the results have just come through, I was looking at them just, a day or so ago, and it becomes clear that the sort of results and the accuracy that you get from this is very impressive. And as Simon Saunders, the aerial boss, has told us, very worthwhile.
Mm. Good.
I'm looking forward to writing the story.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to reading it. Meantime, thank you, mate.
See you soon.
See you next week.